This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
This is On Driven on Joy 94.9, the multicultural show with Hugh today. The On Driven represents peace and understanding in our multicultural GLBTIQ community. If you have any comments on the program or would like to ask any questions, you can contact us in the following ways. Facebook, On Driven on Joy 949, or you can SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email onair@joy.org.au. On today's show, we're talking to Anthony Rosario. Anthony is originally from Singapore and relocated to Melbourne in April 2010. He has worked as communications manager for several large companies and also won the Taste of Harmony short story competition this year. Anthony will talk about his life in Singapore, when he realised he was gay, and all about communications, because that's what he's good at. Stay tuned to On Driven on Joy 94.9 to hear Anthony's story.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Joy 94.9, this is On Driven with myself, Hugh, today. Everyone's deserted me, but I have a very nice guest to keep me company, and Anthony Rosario is our guest today, and Anthony's from Singapore. Welcome to the show, Anthony.
Thank you for having me here.
You're welcome. Now, Anthony, just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. You're Singaporean, but just tell them your background.
I moved here last year in March 10.
Okay.
That's right. And I'm in my late 40s. It was
very good of you to tell us that. Not many people admit on the air.
Late 40s is good. I keep people guessing. It's still
okay.
I've been told I don't look my age, so I'm quite happy with that. It was to change the way I've been living my life. I've had to.
That's why you came to Australia.
It was, yes, to embrace more of the gay me than. And where Singapore, where it's a much more conservative culture and it's very, very hetero society, I didn't feel that there were lots of me that were being fulfilled.
Right.
I was still living with expectations from the family, what they would like me to be, as opposed to what I wanted to be. And that was what moving to Australia was. It was kind of really hard when you think about the fact that you've established a lifestyle, you have a career that's going on, and you know things in your country. And then when you pick yourself up and you move to another country and have to start all over again.
It's difficult.
It is difficult. Yeah, it is very hard. You start thinking about it. And when you do it in your late 40s, you think, is this the time for a change? It was a very hard decision to make. I had a lot of support from a lot of friends, and I knew that I needed to do this for me. Mm. And if I'm not going to do it now, I'm not sure when I'm going to do it.
Now, you come from an Indian background.
Yes.
Where do your parents actually come from?
My parents are from Kerala in India, where we're called Malayalis. We speak Malayalam. My dad.
I didn't catch that.
We speak Malayalam.
Okay.
Yeah. And hence we are Malayalis. My dad.
Say that when you're drunk.
my dad actually ran away from home when he was a teenager.
Really?
Yes, he did. He jumped. He had a fight with his dad. That's what my mom says. And then he ran away, jumped on a ship, sailed on a ship. This was in the 40s and 50s, and ended up in then Malaya, which is now Malaysia, and worked all his way down to Singapore and established himself in Singapore, and then wanted to get married, but then asked for a bride from India, and my mom was shipped over as well. And that was
shipped over.
Yes, she was shipped over in the I think it was in the late 50s and early 60s.
And so even though your father jumped ship, as we say,
yes,
and left all the family in Kerala,
yeah,
they still arranged a marriage for him.
Yes, he still wanted to maintain that culture. He wanted to maintain the family as he knew it. Even though he'd moved to Singapore, he was still embracing his way of life. That's right. Where he wanted to be, in his way of life. And that was part of the issues that I had, because he was very much very Indian. very Catholic, and he believed in a very patriarchal society, and there was no room for gay people.
Oh, okay.
There was no room for me. So that was the kind of upbringing I had, being involved in that particular culture where there were so many expectations, so many limitations as well, and I was told, this is what I have to do, this is who I have to be, this is how I have to act. And it contradicted with me on the inside, because there were a whole lot of other things I wanted to do. And it was also the 60s and 70s when I was growing up, and in Asia, where I didn't have an awareness of being gay, or what being gay was, or what it was like to see other people who are gay.
Okay. And being Catholic, of course, wouldn't help the situation, would it?
No. And it didn't help at all. And as the saying goes, I felt that I was the only gay in the village.
What about your mother? Did she find it easy going to Singapore and settling down?
She had no choice either.
Oh, right.
Her dad told her that was what she was going to do, that her marriage had been arranged for her. From what I heard, she didn't want to get on a ship because she's never been anywhere out of her village in India. But again, she had no choice. She had to do it. So she got on a ship and went on an adventure that she didn't want at all, and married a man she never saw.
Wow.
But my parents fell in love after their wedding and have been together all their lives till my dad passed away. And they were, for me, the kind of relationship I would hope to have with somebody someday.
Right.
I found that they had a lot in their relationship, and they worked at that a lot. And I think that was the most important thing I learned from my parents. One of the positive things.
The one thing you did do, even though you wanted to get away and I suppose be yourself, but you stayed to your late 40s. Why did you leave it so late?
That's a good question. I should have left earlier. I should have gone and done what I wanted to do. But my dad passed away 15 years ago. And what happened was my mother turned to me as her clutch, to so to speak. And she started depending on me to do a lot of things for her, to look after her, to be financially responsible for her, to do the things that she wanted to do with somebody as well. And at that time, because I was feeling quite empty and I was feeling without a mission or without an objective, I let her be that person for me as well.
Right.
And in a way, as much as she depended on me, I was depending on her. But it was not a good relationship. That's why when I made the decision to move over, she was the only person that said, no, you can't go.
Oh. Okay, this is On Driven on Joy 94.9. We'll come back to Anthony's story very soon.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9, this is On Driven with Hugh, and my guest today is Anthony. And before we go back into Anthony's story, we would like to hear from you if you're enjoying the show, or if you want to ask Anthony a question even. You can SMS 0427JOY949, or you can email us onair@joy.org.au. And I'm sure we'd like to hear from you, but I'm sure if it's a question, Anthony will answer it for you as well. So, Anthony, before the break, we were talking about your mother wasn't happy you coming to Australia. So tell us exactly what did she say to you, or what did she do?
I remember when I made the decision, because my life was in a rut and it was going on. I felt like a hamster on a wheel. I was doing the same thing almost every single day and going to the same places and going to meet the same people and doing the same thing, that it was a pattern and it wasn't doing anything for me. I wasn't achieving anything. I wasn't going anywhere. And on the gay side, it was like zero. So being in that, I talked to my friend Rhoda and we had a conversation and she said, you know, you've got a visa to Australia. Don't understand why you're still here and why you don't go, because you need to go and you need to expand and you need to do the things that you need to
do. So at this point, you said you had a visa?
Yes. Okay. Yes. I have a visa to live here. So I went and I called my family together, my brother and his wife, and my mother, and I said, I'm making a very big decision. I'm making a really tough decision for myself. I've done everything for you guys for the last how many years being single. You've always depended on me, wanted me to do all of those stuff. But now it's about me. So I want to go and move to Australia and start living my life the way I want to live it. My brother and his wife said, that's all the thing you've been talking about. Go and do it. Mm. And my mom said, oh, no, you can't go. And that was the hardest thing in the world, because at that time, after my dad passed away, I've been primarily looking after her, taking care of her needs, and giving her everything that she needed. And I thought that she would be one of my biggest supporters, but it turns out she was looking after herself.
Okay.
And it was her expectations again imposed on me and what she wanted me to do. And I had to make that really tough decision. And we went into a huge argument. But I said, no, sorry, this is my decision. This is about me. I'm doing this, whether you like it or not. And that's something you need to deal with. I wish I'd done that better now.
There's no easy way to do something like that, though, is there?
It can be done a little bit easier. One of the things I learned as being a communications manager is I thought about me at that stage and what I wanted to do and how I felt as a victim so much. I never stopped to think about how she was feeling and what her emotions were going through and what were some of the issues that she was already going through ahead. If I had, for a moment, put myself in her shoes, and they're not very nice shoes, by the way. She never buys nice shoes. As much as I try to get her nice ones. I could have allayed some of her fears and some of her issues, and then she would have felt a little bit better. She would have been supportive, and she would have been at that time not when we would not have gone through the distress that we went through when we had that huge major fight that we did.
It must have been horrific for her then, the actual day you left. She must have been in tears.
She really, really was. From the time I told her I was leaving till the day that I left, she did every single trick in the book to get me to stay.
Okay.
She would say, your nephews and niece miss you. Do you know what you're doing to them? Do you know what you're doing to the family? Every little thing. And there was a little bit of, you know, being Indian. She did the emotional blackmail thing. You know, you're not looking after your mother. You know, I expect these from you. And I said, well, you know what? I looked after you for the last time. Many years. You have three other children. I think the responsibility goes all around.
One question, why did you pick Australia to come to?
I had been here before previously in my 20s to study. I fell in love with the country. I fell in love with the culture. I fell in love with the people. And also the fact that when I started coming out, when I started realizing who I was and my sexuality and being gay, Australia was a place that embraced it and it made it easier for me. And that's what I wanted to do. And I wanted to come back somewhere where it's good, to some level, there was some level of comfort as well.
Okay. So when you studied, where in Australia were you?
I was studying in WA in Edith Cowan University, and I was doing English.
Okay.
It was a tough move, moving from Singapore to a state that was quite much more relaxed. And, you know, people didn't do a lot of stuff like they would do in Melbourne and Sydney.
WA must have been a huge culture shock.
It was indeed. We didn't have the big shopping centers and there weren't the big shopping brands then. I was really in going back into shock, but like no retail therapy at all. It was horrible. But it also meant I met some real people. Mm. You know, you got to know the people there. And I, to this day, 20 years later, still have some strong friends from WA. They live in they moved out in either in London or in Sydney or in Melbourne. But it's so wonderful that I had that time in WA to establish good relationships.
Coming to Australia as a student, did that help you realize your sexuality?
Yes. The first time I saw two men kiss, I must have reeled back in shock and fallen off my feet, because I've never seen that happen before. And in public too. I just thought, oh my God. And then when they had a parade, and then when they were gay clubs, that was all about affirmation.
You were hooked.
Yes.
And you had to come back.
I had to come back.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to Anthony's story very soon.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9, this is On Tribune with you, and my guest today is Anthony, who originally comes from Singapore, has an Indian Catholic background, and we've been talking about moving to Australia and how your mother did everything in her power to stop you. And you told us that you came here because you'd actually been here before.
Yes, yep. Yes.
Go on.
Yeah. it was the perfect fit for me. To the lifestyle that I enjoyed more as opposed to the one that is in Singapore, which is very much a lot of a rat race and people are just always on the go, trying to achieve more, trying to do more, trying to compete with each other to a level that I decided that I didn't want to do that anymore. And also to be able to embrace the gamey as well. And that was the two most important reasons for me to come here.
Now, one thing, Anthony, as a guest on Orange Ribbon, you get to pick the music.
Ah, yes, I did.
So I think we should actually tell the listener the last three songs that we played. The first one was Kylie.
Yes, All the Lovers by Kylie Minogue, which everyone knows that. Anyone who knows me and anyone who knows me who's listening to the show knows that I would pick Kylie.
Okay.
And after that was Belinda Carlisle with Summer Rain, which I always listen to on my iPhone.
Right.
And the last one we just heard was Tony Bennett and Fly Me to the Moon, which is, I think, one day will be something I would like to do. Not literally to the moon, but to the state where I feel that I'm flying to the moon.
Flying to the moon. Yes. Okay, I won't ask why. Now, let's go back to Singapore a little bit. But one thing you did tell me, you had to do national service.
It's compulsory in Singapore. All males in Singapore by the age of 18 have to go to the army, have to do national service. You might be in the army, you might be in the Air Force, or you might be...
Are you given a choice?
No. They select you based on the fact that you do a 3-week period of exercises and combat training and all of that, and they figure out which is the best course for you. I was very, very surprised because at that stage, when I was 18, I was very much underweight. I looked like a starvation victim. I really did. And I was surprised I was sent into the Air Force in a combat role. And I didn't get that. I mean, I never played games at that time. I never did any kind of sports aside from playing with my dollies. and I was totally surprised that they put me in that. And I thought they were trying to punish me. And again, it was going back to more people telling me what to do, where to stand, what to wear. Everybody wore green. It was really hard to distinguish anyone when everybody...
Just wasn't your color, was it?
No. And I didn't like the fact that everybody else wore the same color as me and the same shade. It was just wrong. And again, more people telling me what to do, how to behave, how to live my life again. And one of the things was being someone who was soft and feminine, people...
Did they react to you?
They did. And there were loads of acts of humiliation and degradation that I went through in the army and in school.
How long were you in the army?
For 2.5 years.
Oh,
for 2.5 years.
That's a long time.
I wasn't enjoying it. It wasn't me. But it taught me one of the things that came out of it was inner strength. I was not prepared for the army physically, emotionally, psychologically. I was not there. And I survived. I actually went into a combat role that was amazing. And I had a fire unit under my command as well. And these are things that continually surprise me that I underestimate what I can do. When I do it, I achieve such great results. I've been through a lot of issues in my life. I've been through a lot of downs and I've come out quite well, and I'm surprised at how I do these things. And part of it, I suppose, is the fact that being in communications, I try to map out what I'm trying to do and how I'm trying to think and process what I'm going through. The other half of it is having a really, really, really good friend. And I've had one in my life for the last 15 years. Her name is Rhoda. I don't know if she's listening in. I hope so. And we've gone through everything. Everything. We've gone through almost every boy as well in Singapore. And
you didn't share boys, surely?
No. Not. But we went out and we picked out together. She would pick up for me and I would pick up for her. And we would help each other through our heartbreaks, would help each other through the family things that we went to, because she too is Indian and comes from a family background that's also quite similar to mine as well.
So tell me, when you met her, did she know that you were gay?
Yes. Yes, she knew, she accepted, she never made any issues. And that was one of the reasons I think that we just got along really well, was there was never an issue. There was never a point of that she needed to confirm or affirm or anything. She just accepted. And we've been friends for the last 15 years. She's in Singapore, and I miss her quite a lot. It's not the same moving out. That was one of the hard part of moving from Singapore, was losing your friends as well. And, well, I've now built new ones, so that's good.
Yeah. One of the odd things, I'm going to say odd.
Okay.
That you told me was,
oh no,
you went on honeymoon with Rhoda.
That's
and
what
her
you
husband.
Do for your friends. That's really what you do for your friends when they say, "Come on my honeymoon with me," you go.
All right.
How it happened was, she met a guy one night and she called me up the next day and said, "I want to go and see this guy again. Will you come and size him up for me?" And I thought, "Oh my God, I've been working all through the night and you've been going out partying, you know." So. There you go. That's my friend. So when I liked him and she liked him and she started dating him, and one day he proposed, and immediately she called me up and said, "Axel proposed." And I said, "Lovely." And she said, "Will you be my bridesmaid?" That's M-A-T-E, not M-A-I-D. I keep having telling people that.
Bridesmaid.
Mate. And okay. I said, "Yes." I said, "Do you not want one of your girlfriends?" And she said, "No, I want you." And I said, "Okay, but I'm happy to be there for you."
Why did you go on honeymoon with them?
Good question. She had not met Axel's family before, and that would be the first time that she was going to meet them. So, she didn't want to be the only one on her. She didn't want to meet them alone. She wanted to have someone there by her side, and the person that she felt the most comfortable with was me. So I went with her, and it was funny. The day before that, we were supposed to have breakfast with Axel's family. We went out clubbing. And we drank a lot, and we actually went to a gay club, and, well, to keep the story short.
I feel sorry for Axel here.
Axel's fantastic. Axel gets along. Axel knows when he's with Rhoda and me that there's nothing else he can do except.
Okay.
And she got totally pissed and couldn't get up in the morning, and she said, "You have to go with Axel to meet his family, because otherwise they'll think that no one from Singapore turned up." And I said, "No, I don't think I'm going to go with him to meet his family." She said, "No, you have to go for me. And despite my best advice, I went there. And we're sitting there, Axel and I are sitting there waiting for his family to turn up. And they start coming in one by one. They walk up to the table, they look at Axel, they look at me, and they look at Axel and they say, "Axel, is there something you want to tell us?" And that went on for quite a long time.
So they actually were walking in expecting a bride to be sitting there, and yes, you're sitting there.
I'm sitting there and they're wondering, what is it that Axel's not telling us?
And they're putting two and two together and getting five.
Exactly. So it was good. They did meet Rhoda later on the day after she was feeling a lot better. And we had a really good holiday in London and in Denmark.
Excellent. Okay, we'll come back to Anthony's story very soon.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9, this is Orange Ribbon with Hugh, and my guest today is Anthony, who has a Singaporean, Indian, Catholic, and now gay background.
Always been gay. Just didn't know it till quite
late. Didn't know it. Now, Anthony, I want to sort of move to a different area of your life and what you did for a career in Singapore. Do you want to just explain what you did there?
I've been in communications for the longest time. I started out right after the army. I moved into I was actually an air traffic controller air traffic controller at the airport in Singapore. I did that for 6 years, and then I realized I didn't want to do this for the rest of my life. So I moved. That's when I moved to WA and studied in English.
Right.
Then I went back and I got a job as an editor of a magazine, which is quite interesting. And then someone offered me a role in a public relations firm, saying that I would be better suited in PR, public relations.
Right.
And I worked for several PR companies, and my last one was a large international PR firm, and I handled luxury clients. I enjoyed
luxury.
Yes. if I could name names, you would be so impressed.
Tell me off air.
And it was a lifestyle I was getting used to, and it was quite comfortable and really quite nice as well.
When you say lifestyle, what do you actually mean by that?
Well, because they were luxury clients, there was events that we went to. We did high-scale events. We had the best food and the best drinks in the house, because we wanted to impress our guests for sure.
So what was your role at these functions, apart from eating and drinking?
apart from eating and drinking, and I got really huge as well. I was with the public relations company. I was the media person.
Right.
And I worked a lot with a lot of medias, giving out the messages from these companies in terms of what the products were and what they were trying to put out to the market, and making sure it was received positively. I also looked after issues management for my clients to make sure there were no negative reports. And if there were negative reports, then how do we then counter those reports? Because sometimes the media reads it slightly differently, and we just need to help them understand where we're coming from as well. And then from there, I was headhunted to join a financial lifestyle planning company, right, again to do media, and that moved into more of a regional role, looking after Singapore, Hong Kong, and Taiwan as well. And I also did internal communication as well as client communications with that company.
Okay.
Helping the senior management and the CEO with the messages that we were putting out to the different audiences that we had, making sure that people understood what we were trying to say, being explicit with what we went through, and being as transparent as possibly as we possibly could in the circumstances.
Right.
When I decided to move to Australia, he said, "Hang on, let me go and ask our head company in Melbourne." And they said, "Yes, come over." And I worked for the parent company here in a large financial planning financial services company here.
Okay. So what was your role in Melbourne?
In Melbourne, I was the internal communications manager. And I looked after the communication. We had about 2,000 staff here in Australia. And mine was to make sure that they were engaged with what the company was doing, and they were also included in our programs and activities, and also in how we wanted them to get involved with the company as well.
Okay, sounds interesting. Where are you going to move to now? Because you've actually left that company that you came to in Melbourne.
Mm.
So what area? Are you going to stay in the same area, or are you going to move into something else?
I am at the moment looking around for something in a similar field. I like being with people. I'm a people person. Media relations was fantastic, but internal communication is something that I find that I can help more people in the company, help them understand what the company is trying to do, help them get engaged with the company, help with retention programs and loyalty programs, and help the company in that part also relate to their people. And one of the things that we wanted to do when we were at this large company here was getting feedback. Because once you get feedback from your people, then you know where you're going right and or where you're not going right as well, and how you can change certain things.
How do you think people coming into this country, migrants or overseas students, how do you see them being helped when they first come here with communication?
I think that the most important thing in my view, that you need to understand that you're coming to a new culture, which means make the effort to learn about how things are done here. And then make yourself be included as well. Listen, because when someone's, you don't always have to be the one who's talking all the time. When you listen to someone, you listen to what they're trying to say to you, and then that can help you to relate to them or give them a reply that they understand. Also, look out for ways that things can be misinterpreted. Words that you would use in your country would have a different meaning here. For example, in Asia, tea is something that we have as Lipton and, you know, but a bickie. In here, some people use tea as dinner.
Yeah,
so you need to know what is being said to you. And if you don't get it, ask again, reaffirm what's being asked, and say, I don't understand why you're saying tea and it's 9 o'clock at night, you know, and for us tea is 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So when you don't understand, just ask. It doesn't hurt to ask, rather than make assumption. And that's the other thing, is don't assume nothing. Don't make stereotypical assumptions and think that that's the way certain people behave. What you need to understand is when people behave the way they do, there's always a reason why they behave the way they do. It might be something steep in their history. It might be something that's cultural. That might be something that's a respectful way of doing things. So it always always helps to put yourself in someone's shoes, empathize with them, learn about them, and find out, you know, why they do what they do.
What do you think about people who come to this country? And I'm talking about migrants. I'm not talking about students who come to learn English like you did. but come here and they can't speak English. And the first thing that they do is go to their own community, stay in that community and speak their own language. What do you think about that type of communication then?
I think there's a sense of what you need to look at that is that they are feeling quite vulnerable and insecure. And they understand that English is not their language. English is spoken widely in Australia. As such, they feel excluded. So they sit in within a community where there's a little bit where they do understand what's happening. They do understand and they have control. Everybody wants, and at the end of it all, it's about the sense of control. But well, it's just like what I did. I moved out of Singapore at a very comfortable stage in my life because I needed to change. I needed change. And for those who are coming here, my advice would be if you're going to need change, you're going to take that step, which is quite difficult, and integrate. You need to learn a language that it's going to help you be economically viable. And help you integrate quite well into society. And it is scary. It can be awkward because you have an accent and the words that you say may not come out right. But eventually you'll get the hang of it. And my advice is go do it. Go to a learning center. There are plenty of places in centers and organizations here that will help you. And I think that making that effort is the right step.
Yeah. A lot of people have gone through it. I went through it myself, a long, long, long time ago when I first came to this country. And it is a difficult step. And it's difficult leaving your country and being accepted in a new country and settling down is very difficult. How long did it take you to settle down?
I think the first time when I got here, because English wasn't an issue for me, I was able to integrate quite well. So it didn't take very, very long. And I have a bit of a bubbly personality, so that helps.
That helps. Okay, we'll come back to Anthony's story very soon.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9, this is On Driven with Hugh, and my guest today is Anthony. And Anthony, we're almost finished with the show. We've got about 4 minutes to go. And I do want to talk about something, because we did introduce it at the beginning of the show, and it was the story you wrote. Tell us what it was all about.
Taste of Harmony, I had a short story competition, and when I was reading the guideline for it, it made me recall something that we did as kids when we were quite young. My dad would wake us up at 6 a.m. in the morning and bundle us off to church, something that we never wanted to do at that morning. But one of the things that he did was we had this black porridge after service.
And did you say black?
Yes, black porridge.
Oh,
it's red bean rice, but it's so dark, it looks like black porridge. That's what it's called.
Right.
And that's something that we did every Sunday. My brothers and I did every Sunday. And every time we have that, we think about my father. So despite a relationship with my parents where that wasn't always 100% wonderful, there were so many positive things about it as well. And that's helped me through a lot of my growing up as well.
But you wrote a story for Taste of Harmony short story and you won.
Yes, I did. Yes. Dinner at a wonderful restaurant.
Okay. And where can people find this?
If you go to Taste of Harmony and you click on the short stories and you look up for my name, you'll find the story there.
So what prompted you to write the story then?
I'm an English student. Writing is something I enjoy. So that's what I did.
And what was the prize?
Was it a dinner for two at a wonderful, wonderful Italian restaurant here in Melbourne, which we enjoyed.
Now, I've actually read the story and it brings a tear to your eye, doesn't it?
It does.
And so you should actually go and look it up. And it's called, tell us, I can...
Bubur Pulut Hitam. That's the Malay word for black porridge.
Okay. I didn't want to say it because it probably sounds stupid. But unfortunately, we are at the end of the show, Anthony. But I want to thank you very much for spending time with me today.
Thank you for having me.
That is On Driven for another week. Our thanks to Anthony for his wonderful story and the chat I've had with him. It's been a pleasure. Also, thanks to Heath on reception for program support. Coming up next on Joy 94.9 is Sha Power Hour, another great show you cannot miss, so stay tuned. First, we've got the news with Byron. Thanks for joining us for On Driven today. On Driven will be back next Saturday at 4 p.m. with more insights into our GLBTIQ community here in Australia and, of course, around the world. From me, Hugh, thank you very much for listening. and have a great week.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.